the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Most of us know enough about reality and truth and the importance of all these things. The urgency of moral integrity, that we resist moral relativism. That is, we resist the idea that is now being propounded by so many postmodern theorists and others that all moral relatives, all moral values and moral principles, moral truths are relative. The argument of moral relativism leads to a complete meltdown of moral meaning, because if something can be moral in one place and immoral in another, or if we only know what's moral or immoral because of context and local conditions, then even something as simple as murder is wrong becomes a debatable concept, because maybe in some contexts or in some places it isn't. Of course, most of the people who make the argument for moral relativism are making it for only a thin slice of moral questions. I mean, after all, even the postmodern academics that argue for moral relativism on sex don't want moral relativism when it comes to finances. They do not want it to be relative to where they may have their bank account. But when it comes to issues of personal sexuality, what is now called on the left sexual privacy, you have a form of moral relativism creeping in that I think may catch us a little bit by surprise. I think we need to think about this very carefully. Let me tell you how this works. It works with what I call conservative moral relativism. It has to do with relatives. I'm obviously playing with words here, because this is not the ideological form of moral relativism that seriously argues that all moral truths are relative. It is instead the reality that once we have a relative involved in many activities or lifestyles, we don't talk about it anymore. There is a creeping form, thus, of the giving away and letting loose many moral principles by the fact that we just don't talk about them, raise them, defend them, or apply them when a relative becomes involved. Let me tell you how this has worked in this country with divorce. People have held a very clear line. Christians especially, churches have held a clear line about divorce, and then all of a sudden someone changes the mind or no longer talks about it or no longer thinks it's an issue that needs to be defended, and you find out it's because their son or daughter's been divorced. You find out that it's someone's mother, father, son, daughter, first cousin, aunt, uncle, whatever, that is now involved in this, and we don't talk about it anymore. You can see this creeping form of moral relativism on issues all across the board, but right now, front and center in the nation's news media, is a form of this kind of moral relativism, that is, a relative involved, that indeed has caught the national attention, and that is the fact that Mary Cheney, the daughter of Vice President Dick Cheney, and her partner, Heather Poe, have announced they are expecting a child, that Mary Cheney is pregnant. The vice president and his wife have announced that they are eagerly anticipating the birth of their sixth grandchild. And now, as during the presidential campaigns of 2000 and 2004, you have a situation involving a relative that appears to put the moral question off the table. The issue today is not really about Mary Cheney and her baby. The issue is about how we as conservatives can give away the store culturally, morally, and indeed in terms of argument and intellectual integrity by changing our minds, or maybe just deciding not to raise the issue anymore when a relative is involved. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Back in the year 2004, I called this moral relativism Republican style. I think it has to do with a lot of Christians and churches. It's not just a Republican issue, although in this case, obviously the media thinks it has found a big story, because here you have the vice president's daughter demonstrating a lifestyle and making reproductive decisions that are at odds with the party that Mr. Cheney ran on, the ticket of the Republican Party. So it's a very, very interesting and delicate situation. We're not going to allow this conversation today to become an ad hominem attack upon the Cheneys. We're instead going to be very clear. The issue here is how we as Christians, thinking about these issues, need to watch ourselves lest our relatives determine the stability of our moral positions and application of them. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is an issue that comes up very regularly, but at the holiday season, especially with Thanksgiving and Christmas, this is an issue that that many people have to struggle with. I've had people call this program and talk to me, even in recent days, saying, I'm going home, but my my sister is planning to bring her live-in boyfriend to the Christmas meal. How do we deal with that? Or there's a divorce situation, a remarriage situation. Who knows? Moral relativism is now on the right, an issue that that seems to be often surrounding our relatives. We'll be talking about it. 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First to review some issues in the news. In world news, the big news is the death of the former Chilean dictator General Augusto Pinochet. Died at age 91. And, of course, we're dealing here with one of those personalities that outlived their media exposure. There are an awful lot of Americans today who do not hear the name Augusto Pinochet with the kind of recoil and the kind of notoriety that would have been so just 15, 20 years ago. According to press reports, General Pinochet, who seized power on September 11, 1973, eventually either tortured or killed more than 3,200 persons. Thousands more in scores of thousands were detained and tortured or exiled. He gave up the presidency in 1990 after promulgating a constitution that, according to the New York Times, I'm reading here, empowered a right-wing minority for years, end quote. Now, one of the interesting aspects of this historical development, the death of Augusto Pinochet, is that it raises the truly hard issues of foreign policy, the very grave difficulty of applying moral principles in the international sphere. Why do I say that? It is because the American government, in successive administrations, judged that it was better to support Augusto Pinochet than to allow communists to take control in Chile. And that was a moral decision that was made. It was a geopolitical decision that was made. It was a decision that was made not only with reference to Pinochet in Chile, but to numerous other leaders, repressive regimes, and governments around the world. We look back at it now, and it's still a mixed moral question. It's like the big moral question of colonialism. Was it good or was it bad? The answer is yes. It was both good and bad. It's a situation so morally complex that it's difficult to take it apart. It's difficult to know who are the good guys and the bad guys. It's hard to know exactly what would have been the most moral decision made, both with the creation of colonialism and with its dismantlement. The same thing is true looking back at the Cold War. There were very difficult decisions made, both in the United States and in other governments, about whom to support. Obviously, the United States says it's committed to a democratic form of government for people all over the world. No American administration would say anything different than that. But in the realities of the Cold War, it became necessary at times, or at least was judged prudent at times, for the United States to support persons that we found unseemly simply to avoid something worse. In a fallen world, sometimes in foreign policy, that seems to be the way it goes, and no one exemplified clear thinking, or at least an attempt at thinking clearly and honestly about these things, more than the late Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick, who died last week. It's interesting and ironic that Ambassador Kirkpatrick and Augusto Pinochet should die within days of each other. It was Jean Kirkpatrick's book written back in the 1970s and applied in the 1980s entitled Dictatorships and Double Standards that perhaps for the first time addressed the issue during the Cold War of whether it was moral to support repressive right-wing regimes if the alternative was a communist regime that would lead to the furtherance of the communist mission and expansion around the world. That was a debatable thesis then. I think by and large it was more true than false. But like in everything else, we have to take moral responsibility for our actions as individuals and, yes, as nations. And the United States is remembering those who are certainly old enough to remember the difficulties of our relationship with Augusto Pinochet. Also, the death of Augusto Pinochet, like the death of many dictators and tyrants, reminds us that no earthly court is ever capable of exacting true justice. What if you could have arrested Adolf Hitler at the end of World War II? What if you could have held a great trial? What if you could have held him to the bar of justice? And what if you could have, for instance, executed him? It still, in terms of the forfeiture of his life, would have been a very minor thing, the forfeiture of his life, even through capital punishment. It would have been right, but it would not have been sufficient. Total justice belongs to God alone. Augusto Pinochet may have avoided conviction in a court of human rights, even though he was indicted and there was an attempt to bring him to trial. He never reached trial because he was judged unable to face the trial due to health conditions. Obviously, his death underlines that there was at least some truth in that. But when you hear in the media that Augusto Pinochet avoided the court of justice, don't believe it for a minute. He may have avoided earthly justice, human justice, but he will not avoid facing the bar of God's justice. And at the end of the day, that is both the comfort and the challenge that must frame our understanding of Augusto Pinochet and of ourselves. We'll be back to talk about moral relativism, conservative style. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Mary Cheney's pregnant, the daughter of Vice President Dick Cheney and his wife Lynn Cheney, is pregnant, and she, along with her partner, are now expecting this baby. And the Vice President and his wife released a statement saying that they are eagerly anticipating the birth of their sixth grandchild. And in this case, of course, Mary Cheney's partner is Heather Poe. It is Mary Cheney who is carrying the baby. And this has been declared, for instance, by the Washington Post, an Ellen DeGeneres moment. Very interestingly, an Ellen DeGeneres moment. One of those cultural turning points, according to the Washington Post, when it's going to change the very texture of the debate. We're going to have to talk about gay marriage. We're going to have to talk about gay adoption. We're going to have to talk about gay couples and gay families differently, according to the Washington Post and its columnist Ruth Marcus. Simply because of this development. It is such a signal event that it's going to change everything. Well, I'm not sure about that, but I will tell you that my concern about it is different than what I'm hearing from a lot of people. And I had an interesting conversation this morning with some folks about this whole question and what it means for the culture. And here's my thesis. My thesis is this isn't just about Mary Cheney and Heather Poe. This isn't just about Mary Cheney and her baby. It's not just about the Cheney family, the vice president and his wife and their two daughters and their circle of family, now to include six grandchildren when this child is born. It's about the fact that not only among Republicans, because that's where the Washington Post is focused, and it's not only on political conservatives, that's where others in the media are focused, it also has to do with Christian conservatives. It also has to do with evangelical Christians. It has to do not only with the political arena, but in our churches. We are backtracking off of some clear moral issues because a relative is involved. Now, I have called this, going back for years now, a conservative form of moral relativism. What I'm talking about there is when a relative's involved, we sometimes decide, well, we're just not going to talk about that anymore. We may not even admit that to ourselves. Let me give you an illustration. Let's say that a local church has a very clear policy and a very clear teaching on divorce. And then all of a sudden, you find a leader in the church who just appears to be less sympathetic to that position, more open to divorce or to remarriage after divorce or to service of a divorced person in the church or someone who says, well, I think maybe something is a ground for a legitimate divorce that they would never have said before. And you find out that the reason they're saying that is because they have a son or a daughter or a close friend or a relative who has divorced on those grounds. And they're just not going to take a public position that says that their loved one is in sin. That's the bottom line. They will not take a public position, maybe even a private position within the family, that says that this loved one has committed sin or is living in sin. And that is a new form of moral relativism. Perhaps it's not new. Maybe it just becomes more evident and acute in our current context. You see, it's kind of a creeping thing, isn't it? You can have this happen with illegitimate births. You can have this happen with abortion. You can have this happen with divorce. You can have this. Well, as someone told me, I had a person write the program and say, look, we're going home for Thanksgiving. This was just a few days ago, just before the Thanksgiving holiday. That we're going home for Thanksgiving, and my sister and her live-in boyfriend are planning to come. What do we do when they want to stay in the house, in my parents' house? You know, do we acknowledge that or what? Well, at least they were struggling with the issue, but there are an awful lot of families that would say, let's just look the other way. After all, this person is your sister, or this person is your brother, your son, your daughter, your nephew, your niece, your uncle, whatever. What happens? Well, let's just see how this creeps. What happens is that a new normal is set. And that's exactly what those who are pushing the moral revolution taking place around us are counting on. They're counting on fatigue setting in. We'll get tired of fighting these battles. They are counting on a new normal being reset within the culture that means we just don't even talk about this. When something happens and, just replay history. Just imagine that 20 years ago, a sitting vice president's daughter was found to be living in a lesbian relationship and then to have one way or another conceived a child. That would have been scandalous, not 30 or 40 years ago alone, but even 15 or 20 years ago. But not now. A new normal is being reset. And one of the cultural moves that helps to effect that cultural reset, that moral reset, is when something like this happens to a loved one. And you just say, you know, I am not going to talk about this publicly. I don't want to embarrass my loved one. I don't want to make an issue out of this. I don't want to hurt the relationship. I don't want it to be awkward at Christmas. Let's just let it go. Now, I would not claim to know anything about the inner workings of the Cheney family. I wish the very best for them. I don't know Mary Cheney, but I hope this child is healthy. I hope this child is happy. James Dobson's written a very interesting article published at Time.com. It will be in Time magazine this week, in which he makes the argument, the title of the article is Two Mommies is One Too Many. It's really a rather sweet article, Dr. Dobson, and let me just, in the interest of full disclosure, say that I'm a member of the board of directors of Focus on the Family. He is a dear friend and colleague. I would say of Jim Dobson that he has written a very clear-headed piece here in which he makes some very cogent points about the fact that children need fathers, that it is not good for the culture to celebrate the fact that this baby is intentionally being brought into the world without a father. And he cites some social science research, but just basically appeals to the American conscience on the issue that we should privilege childbearing for heterosexual couples where there will be a mother and a father. Now, Dr. Dobson is going to get an awful lot of heat for this. You can almost expect the kind of venomous response that's going to come. You have no right to speak about this, or that this is hate speech or whatever else. No, the minute that we concede that it is hateful even to consider the morality of a situation like this, we've just given up any moral coherence. We've given up the ability to have a serious adult conversation. We're not going to be in an ad hominem attack upon Mary Cheney. We're not going to be debating the legalities in this case of gay marriage or gay families. We're going to be talking about how a moral revolution takes a major advance when we decide we're just going to reframe the question because a relative is involved. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. My theory is this. The Washington Post columnist Ruth Marcus says this is an Ellen DeGeneres moment. I think it might be. I think it may be one of those moments in the culture when we look back and we say, you know, that was one of those developments that kind of slipped under the radar in December of 2006. We didn't realize how important and symbolic that particular announcement was. If this was the announcement made in a liberal Democratic administration, it would not be so surprising. If it were made by someone, you know, from the gay rights community in San Francisco, it wouldn't be so surprising. Obviously, the interest in this is in the fact that Dick Cheney ran on a ticket as the second person on the ticket, the vice president of the United States, of the party that ran on a platform against the legalization of gay marriage and for the privileging of heterosexual couples, against the gay rights agenda. And now you can look across the blogosphere, you can look across the national media, and you can see that the advocates of homosexual rights see this as a tremendous victory. And as for the Cheneys, well, there's no mention of their daughter's lifestyle. There's no mention of what goes on within their family in terms of moral judgment. Back in the 2004 race, Mr. Cheney said, as he was involved in various forms of campaigning, that freedom means freedom for everyone, including the freedom to enter any kind of relationship they want to. Now, the spokesperson for the vice president says that the vice president and Mrs. Cheney are eagerly anticipating the birth of their sixth grandchild. Homosexual rights advocates have jumped on it, like Matt Foreman in particular, to say the eagerness of the Cheneys indicates movement in their direction. I think it's probably an illustration of what happens when a relative is involved. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is the kind of tough discussion that we have to have from time to time to think about things differently then the national media might contextualize them or might be even the form of conversation about the issue you would find in your workplace or even around your family table. We've got to sometimes turn the question and say, what's really going on here? What's the bigger issue? It's not just about Mary Cheney, the Cheney family, and all the rest. It's about how we deal with moral questions when they hit closest to home. Because I guarantee you, there's not going to be a home, a family, a marriage in America that's not going to have to face some of these issues. If it's not homosexuality and gay marriage and gay adoption and gay parenting, it's going to be something else. Because in this morally confused world, there is no escape. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Lynn, listening on XM170, calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I have a question for you. Of course, God's Word is sovereign over this and all matters. However, I would like to ask, what would we as loving people, Christians, ask the Cheneys to do at this time? They're facing a difficult situation with their daughter, and how do we as Christians love them and help them to do the right thing, and maybe even help them in a public way to do the right thing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lynn, and it's a responsible question because we come back and we ask, how would you reframe this? I would say the only quibble I would have with the way you put that is that the Cheneys have not acknowledged this is in any way a difficult situation. In fact, they've been at public pains to indicate it's not a difficult situation. I think that's where I would differ, and I'm not in this position. But I've been in similar positions just in terms of things happening to people I know. And I would have to say, even if this were my own daughter, I'd have to say this is a lifestyle I cannot endorse. I believe it is an issue of extreme moral significance. I wish it were not so, but I love my daughter. I will continue to love my daughter, even as she is a sinner. She was a sinner before I came to know this, but I am going to struggle with her, but I'm going to struggle with her honestly. I'm going to love her, and this is not going to eliminate nor mitigate my love for her. But it has created a difficulty within our family that because we are a family, we're going to deal with in a Christian way, praying for each other and seeking the best for each other in Christ. But we're not going to adopt a moral relativism that says we're just going to ignore the moral issue here. I can't ignore the moral issue even when it's a relative involved. And so, Lynn, that's a good question. I think what I would want to say is, yes, this is a difficult situation. Publicly and privately, it's a difficult situation. And because it is a public situation, it just makes it all the more difficult. So pray for us. Be concerned about us. We're going to do the very best we can under the circumstance to do the right thing. And we're going to love our daughter in the midst of it. Does that make any sense, Lynn?
It absolutely does. And thank you very much. I think that was a great answer. Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Let's go to Valerie calling from Omaha, Nebraska, listening on KCRO. Go ahead, Valerie.
Yes. I don't so much have a question, but just a statement. In my own family, my brother was with his girlfriend for a while, and I think the most important thing was that we communicated the truth to him, but we did it in love. Because to just come out and say, hey, you're a sinner, is not really communicating the truth in love. And I think both of those have to go hand in hand when dealing with our own families, because God tells us to obey his laws because he loves us. It's not just a set of rules. So I think
right.
It's very important if we do love our families to communicate the truth and not to just brush it aside.
You know, Valerie, that's such an important point, to express the truth in love. And as you think about that, and I think about the situation you just detailed, I want to ask you, Was that an easy thing? Because, you know, my assumption is that it's difficult to face a brother whom you do love with that kind of truth.
It was actually very difficult because before I became a Christian, I had made a similar choice. And so knowing that I could be looked at as a hypocrite, it was very difficult. It was very difficult for my mom to say that she wished that they were married first.
But that's honesty. And God bless you, Valerie, for your integrity and honesty in dealing with it just that way. And, you know, your brother must know and have known that you loved him and do love him. And that it's not a question of whether you love him or not. And it's the same situation for any of us caught in a similar kind of context. It's not a matter of whether we love the person. It's whether we love them enough to tell them the truth. And then, having told them the truth, love them still and show that we love them still. Very difficult decisions about somehow and sometimes how to apply that. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program. This kind of moral reset taking place all around us, and we can detect it. Sometimes it's only in retrospect. We look back and say, boy, you know, that really was one of those moments when everything kind of changed, a Murphy Brown moment, an Ellen DeGeneres moment. And some of these moments are for good. You know, a Martin Luther King at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial moment. You look back and you say, boy, that was a moment of moral clarity. All of a sudden we saw something we hadn't seen before. A new normal is set, and that new normal was to come out and say, you know, it should be unthinkable that we would suggest that persons ought to be judged by the color of their skin rather than the content of their character. That was a good thing. These seminal turning point moments can be for good, or they can be for ill. And in this case, I fear it is. By the way, at the Huffington Post is an article by Deborah Chasnoff, who is a woman who in 1984, that's 22 years ago, made her first film, which was a documentary, and this is the way she explains it, that explored the then extremely radical and unheard of idea that lesbians could have children. She says, fellow producer Kim Klausner and I traveled across the country unearthing a handful of lesbians who had boldly decided to become mothers. And she says this, when I first heard the news last week that Vice President Cheney's daughter Mary and her partner were expecting a baby, I thought, wow, it's finally happened. A true revolution within our lifetime, actually in less than even 25 years, end quote. That's what I'm talking about, the moral revolution with a new moral reset. Less than 25 years after this woman made a movie in which the idea that lesbians would have children together was so radical that they had to travel across the country to find persons, now you have the Vice President of the United States' daughter making the announcement. And actually, she didn't make the announcement. This is another very interesting thing. The spokesperson for the Office of the Vice President of the United States made the announcement. That, again, is itself a poignant point of meaning and significance. Let's go to Frank, who's in Ignacio, Colorado, listening on KTGW. Go ahead, Frank.
Thanks, Dr. Mueller. I think I would have been more comfortable if he would have said something like, you know, our daughter is an adult and she makes her own decisions, and there are decisions that she makes that we do and do not agree with, but we will love the child regardless. And I think that one of the things that I see in the homosexual community is they think that if you love them, you have to love what they do, and they can't comprehend the fact that you can love someone and not agree with the decisions that they make or with the lifestyle that they live. And I would have sure been appreciated if he would have stated that in a more clear way.
Well, Frank, I think you really kind of nailed it there in an appropriate way to address this. And I like the wording you used. I think that makes a lot of sense. We do acknowledge that we can't make decisions for our children or for our relatives of a certain age. We're going to have to live with the decisions they make. And I also like the way you said we're going to love this child. Of course we would expect the Cheneys to love this child. You know, what else could they do? What else would they do? But, you know, here is another problem, and this has to do with even, let's take it out of the gay marriage, gay family, gay adoption context, and or gay conception context, and take it to the context of, say, just a baby born out of wedlock. We've reached the point in this country where in some communities a majority of children are born out of wedlock. That's not a good thing. Now, it's not the child's fault. The moral status of the child is not different at all. And that's why we shouldn't talk about illegitimate children. We should talk about illegitimate conceptions. But, you know, it still is not good. It's not healthy. It's not right. It's not honest if we don't talk about the problem of illegitimacy. That's not because we don't love those children. It's not because we don't want the best for those children. It's not because we don't want them to grow up and thrive and prosper and be happy. It's because we believe they deserved better than this. And we believe that the moral choice that led to this was not the right moral choice, either for the child or for others. But, you know, when you look at the face of this grandbaby, as the Cheneys are soon to do, they're going to love this child. We want them to love this child. But that doesn't mean that you ignore the circumstances and the context into which this child came to life. Frank, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate the point you made. I want to go back to this article by Deborah Chasnoff, in which she says, a true revolution within our lifetime, actually less than even 25 years. You see, the pace of moral, cultural transformation is now sped up to the extent that we are experiencing these changes in such a fast way. The multiple different dimensions of media exposure have a lot to do with this. Now, for instance, let me just tell you, tomorrow we're going to be talking about something at the top of the program having to do with South Korea and the fact that South Korea is experiencing a fall off of birth, perhaps more catastrophic than even other communities around the world. And one of the things that they are pointing out is that the media in South Korea have been portraying professional women and in positive lights and women who stay at home and raise their children in a very negative way. And so you have the government of South Korea now saying, you know, this is not good. This is not good. It shows you again that the media does have a massive influence, even as recognized by governments. And one of the ways the media contextualizes this is by telling us how we're supposed to respond. There's an insinuation as to how we're supposed to respond to these things. And when it comes to the announcement about Mary Cheney's pregnancy, the mantra we're getting and the mood that is setting in from the media is, this is just the new normal. Deal with it. This is just the new normal. Don't criticize it. This is just the new normal. Smart, sensitive, well-intending persons don't talk about this. Well, I don't think we can go there. Now, you're going to hear some really mean and ugly and ad hominem things said about Mary Cheney, and we're not going to go there either. I would encourage Christians to think very carefully about how to speak to this issue in such a way that we tell the truth, but we do not do so with moral condescension, and we do not do so with hypocrisy, and we do not do so with a spirit that would do injury to our Christian witness. This issue is a lot bigger than Mary Cheney. It's a lot bigger than Heather Poe. It's a lot bigger than the child that is the focus of this pregnancy. It's a lot bigger than the Cheneys. It's a lot bigger than the Republican Party and you name it. The issue is, how should we frame our lives? How should we relate to each other as significant issues arise and as we recognize each other as moral creatures, responsible moral creatures? How do we respond to each other? Think about, even within the intimacies of our families and our social acquaintances, how do we address these issues? And like I say, if it hasn't yet happened in your family that you have faced some excruciating issue like this, it soon will. And that's not a threat. That's just a reality of life in this fallen world. A part of it is just life in this fallen world in which everything is now talked about, whereas in times past, it might well not have been. Now, very few families are going to live with the kind of media pressure and scrutiny and publicity as the Cheney family, and this is something that we should pray for them about. But you're going to face it. We're all going to face it one way or another. It doesn't have to be gay marriage or gay adoption. It can be divorce, extramarital sex, illegitimate birth, you name it. We do know that we need to pray for Mary Cheney. We need to pray for the Cheney family. We need to pray for our nation. And we need to pray in anticipation that we would respond with the right spirit, the right words, and the right approach if and when we find ourselves in a similar situation. We'll be right back. Welcome back. As we are thinking through these issues, let me just thank you for the mail you're sending in. We get some great questions and comments. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com or go to www.albertmohler.com. Hit the mail button and we'll get your communication. We've been getting some really good stuff. Katie in Kentucky wrote in to say, what is happening with the souls of the approximately 400,000 frozen embryos in the United States? So where are these souls? Are they in a state of nothingness, or are they with the Lord, or something else? Katie, this is the same question that will be true of an embryo in the human womb, in a mother's womb. The fact is that, or a person who's in a coma, we do not believe that so long as the body is living that the soul is separate. We believe that there is a temporary separation at death, such that the Apostle Paul can say to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. But insofar as these are human embryos frozen, they're like human embryos that would be in the womb, or they're like human beings that might be in a coma or an extended unconscious state. And so I wouldn't worry that there's some place where these souls are other than where the embryos are. But it's a good reminder that these are true human beings made in the image of God. And that's one of those mysteries that we're going to have to struggle with. And it just demonstrates again the moral horror of having hundreds of thousands of human souls frozen in cold storage. Another listener, Patricia, wrote in to ask about the Da Vinci Code movie. Says, if Jesus identified with us and took on human nature, why is it not possible that he could have married? Of course, that's the argument of the Da Vinci Code. And let me just turn around and say the issue there is not the word possible, but the word actual. You know, what did Jesus actually do? Jesus himself made clear that he did not come to establish a family. He did not come to marry and to have children. As a matter of fact, even in Matthew chapter 13, actually back in Matthew chapter 12, he refers to the fact that his mother and sisters and brothers are those who are the believers in the church. His family is the church family. His bride is the redeemed, the body of the redeemed, known as the bride of Christ. The other problem you would have, Patricia, to think about this, is that if Jesus came and did marry and have a child, that child would share in his divine essence. And, that's just completely alien to the Bible. And, you know, one of the things we always need to keep in mind is that the question of possibility is usually not the right question for the Christian to ask. I appreciate the fact that Patricia wrote in and asked it in this context because it gives me the opportunity to talk about it. It's like the question, could God possibly have forgiven sinners apart from the cross of Christ? And the answer to that is no. Yes, in the sense that whatever God does is what God does. If he had done it a different way, that would have been perfect. But what God does by the fact that he's a perfect being is perfect, and it's impossible for him to do anything less than what is perfect. Possibility is generally not the right question. The Bible tells us to focus on the actuality and know that what actually happened is perfect. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation, Coast to Coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.